I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime. Hi.
Hey, you guys. Happy day.
Happy day that ends in Y.
Thanks for joining us.
Yes. Hi, hello, and welcome, or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
You guys.
That's us. We are just hanging out here at the beginning, but then we get into our cases later on, obviously. But we just wanted to say hi, because we usually wait.
I know. We haven't said hi in a little bit, and here's something.
Yes.
We had some polls on our Instagram page before about, like, just ask questions, because a lot of people are like, we don't know what you look like, and tell us more. And so I just figured we would answer some questions. So we had a few, which were what made us get into true crime podcasting.
Yes.
So do you want to go first? What made you get into true crime podcasting?
You.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's see. So Allie and I are really big nerds, and we both have degrees in education and criminal justice. We both work in and around the field of criminal justice. And we love that, and also true crime, because I think that kind of goes hand in hand a lot of times, not always. And I was always just talking to her about true crime when we worked together for so long. And I would pop over to her little cube on our lunch breaks, and I'd be like, did you fucking hear?
And then I would be like, tell me everything. And so we kind of were already doing this.
Yes. And then we just, well, by we, I mean you, had the beautiful idea, baby brainchild, of like, what if we just fucking recorded it? And we made it a podcast. And I said, I'm in for sure. That I want to sign up for that.
We had the expectation that like maybe a couple of friends and our parents would listen. Yeah. And we were like, that's cool. And I figured that's pretty cool. We can all learn together and have a good time.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. They're still listening. But this community has grown to be something so much cooler and so much bigger. And for me, at least, this is such a nice break from real life.
Yeah.
Like we, you know, we have our education in the field, and that's a combined over a decade. And our work experience is more than that. And we love what we do. We love what we went to school for. I wouldn't change a thing. But there is something cool about having a community outside of all of that.
Yeah.
That is not, you know, we don't represent our workplaces. We don't represent any of those, you know, our where we went to school or anything like that. We just were a couple of nerds who were very interested in the intricacies of like the psych behind this stuff. And well, what can we do? And I think this is rooted in like anxious girly shit. So like, well, I need to know it so that I can make sure it doesn't happen again. And like, how do I protect myself? And so much of this is like, we feel more comfortable with things once we know that we might expect them.
Right.
And I think that part of that is like part of the coping, and just, I don't know, we're empaths to a fault. So we apologize that we like put ourselves in the position of everybody that we talk about. And we really sit and feel a lot of the, like it's heavy, but it's so important, and that if we can learn something and bring attention to cases that otherwise weren't getting it, then I sleep very well at night knowing that in our free time, our fun time, that we a community that we can hang out with, that we're all respectful, we can learn and grow together and do that. You guys, that's the coolest thing ever. We're thrilled to be here.
We love it. And honestly, I think part of that escapism of it isn't necessarily a la la land, you know, it's all very real, but being people who work in and around the field and all of these kinds of people in different spaces, it's so fascinating to us, I think, at least in my point of view, to get to see this happen somewhere else with other people where it has already sort of played out and it's done and there's reflection and time for understanding in a lot of these. And if not, time to bring it up in a space and a place that we can talk about it and try to bring attention to it and sort of do our best to use the knowledge that we have, and not for nothing, the way too expensive degrees that we got.
Yes.
Where we're just exercising that part of our brain. We're just analyzing, we're seeing, we're feeling, and you're just experiencing it as a person and like, holy fuck, this happens in our world.
And how do we prevent it from happening? And what might we do treatment wise and what might be better punitively and what might be better for people to avoid this and
right what legislation
behaviors and all of these things that we can listen. We will not pretend to be authorities on it. We won't pretend to know all the answers, but we will talk about it and be wrong sometimes. And you know what? I love that we get to learn and do it. So there's room at the table for everybody.
Yeah.
And your entry payment is a pod pet. So please send.
Oh my good goodness. A photo
of your pod pet. You know where to send it. You yes. listen to the end. I know you do. If you're joining us after listening to our series on the Karen Reed trials and the death of John O'Keefe, welcome.
Hi. We're so happy to have you here.
We did that very differently because we don't usually work on cases together. We no. actually completely blindside and rock the other one with absolutely no heads up, which is what I'm going to do today.
Oh, great. Before we get into it, I do just have one other thing to share with our fam here. Oh,
please.
I have been reading. If you have been here, you probably know. I have had a huge goal this year of reading 10 books in a year, which for a lot of people does not sound like a huge goal. For me, this is my Mount Everest. And I have happily, shockingly, awfully surprised myself. And I think I am at like 13.
Oh my God. Okay. Snaps for apples.
Wait, maybe 14. Oh my gosh. No, it'll be 14 once I'm done with this book, but it's already so good. I have to recommend it, which okay. almost never happens.
What is it?
So it's called Wrong Place, Wrong Time by Jillian McAllister.
Okay.
And I found it because I have Apple Books, which I love, but every month or so they do a previous month. I don't know if it's like the specific last month or years old. I have no idea how, but they pick an old book from, I think it's Reese Witherspoon's book recommendation, mm-hmm. and they're like $5. So it's super cheap. So I grabbed this from that because it looked like my kind of genre, mm-hmm. and I am obsessed with it. It is a woman who is, without giving everything away, trying to solve a murder that her son commits.
Oh, shit.
And she is trying to do it proactively.
Before he does it?
Yes.
What?
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating book. It has had so many good twists and turns. I've had goosebumps. I already see how it's all going to come together. Like, just in my mind's eye, I don't know all of it. But, like, there's been enough twists and turns that I was like, okay, I know what happened here. Okay, I know what happened here. And then it's just takes you down a 90-degree road and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't see that one coming.
Now, are you listening to it or are we sitting with a physical book?
I'm listening to it. That is the only way my ADHD self can get through books.
Okay. So do we like the voice of the person who's reading it?
I do. It's not my favorite voice of anybody who's ever read things.
Because I think with the audiobooks, like the way that the person does it changes the way the book feels.
Yes.
So I have to ask.
I really like it. It's narrated by one person, although there is very sparing, intermittent, like one other POV that you get. Mm-hmm. That's a man. I would kind of like if there was a different voice for that, just because I'm kind of auditory that way. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't take away from anything. And I don't dislike the voice, which is the biggest thing to me.
Yep.
I don't have to love it. I just need to not dislike it.
I'll turn off a podcast if I don't like someone's voice because it does.
Yeah,
my brain, it matters. It can't happen.
And then you're spending what, like 12, 14, 16 hours with a voice that you're like, okay, but just like, what are you saying?
Yeah. Like, I can't get over how much I don't like this.
Yeah. So good. I love that. And then there's one other one that's really good. And it's more like maybe young adult. It's not true crime. Neither of these are true crime. They're both just mystery thriller mm-hmm. kind of books.
My favorite kind of book.
One of the other ones that I really liked was The Girls I've Been by Tess Sharp.
Ooh.
The initial setup, for just funsies, is a girl goes into a bank with her current girlfriend and also the main character's ex-boyfriend.
Okay.
And then the bank gets robbed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fascinating.
That's all you're gonna give me?
Yeah, that's all I'm gonna give you.
You,
it's so good. So this is my little reading corner. I never thought that I'd be an active reader enough to have one of these. I'm so excited.
I'm working on it, and yet by the time I am sometimes a audiobook,
mm-hmm.
I have to be in the mood for it.
Yeah,
because if I want a dramatic retelling, that's what I'm going for.
Right.
Versus, like, to me, I prefer if I'm listening to something and it's long form, I really like conversational.
Oddly, I can't do a reading true crime. I can always do, like, mystery, but I can't do true crime in a book.
I could see that.
But anyway, keep going. Yes.
But if I'm listening to a podcast or something, I don't want a bunch of dramatic music. For me, personally, yes. I see the value in them and other people love them and I think that's great. But for, like, when I am cleaning or I am in the car or I am doing whatever it is that I'm doing and I want to, like, my brain needs to be busy and I want something I'm interested in, I love bestie vibes. Give yes. me conversation.
Yes, yes, yes.
Give
yes.
me all of the, you know what I mean? Like, I want to feel like I'm in the room with you guys and I'm like, all right, well, guess we're all cleaning my house.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm pulling all the fucking weight here, but all right.
Can you pick up a fucking broom?
It's basically just every other group project you've ever done.
Yes.
Or it's just you doing it anyway. So it just feels like that and I get to learn something new and hear about something true crime, which is my favorite. So it's anyway,
my favorite, which is why I'm so excited for what we're gonna do today.
Oh, you mean like tell you a case?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been told a case.
I know.
I'm so excited. Okay.
She's gotten to sit back because we did the Karen Reed together, which is we have never done that.
Yeah.
That was a new thing for us. Let us know if you liked it.
Yes.
Mm. But for today, you guys already know more than Abby knows because you clicked on it. Abby does not have that luxury. She is getting this all.
Yeah.
Like this is a cold call.
A cold call indeed.
So let's get into it.
Awesome. So, yoo-hoo, pod's on.
Hey, hello, welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Oh, that's us.
You guys are oh so sweet. Tonight, we are headed to a quiet Midwestern town.
Ooh.
A place, personally, I've never been.
A place I personally know well.
Yes. On April 4th, 1991... 20-year-old Angela Hammond was using a payphone in the small town of Clinton, Missouri.
Okay.
She was telling her boyfriend on the phone that she was feeling tired and was about to head home. During that call, though, Angela was abducted.
Oh.
And as of today, no one knows what happened to her.
Well,
she has never been seen since. Her remains have never been found. I'm warning you that much like my last case, the kind of mysterious death of Judy Smith, this one leaves you with more questions than answers.
Ooh.
And while it's infuriating for us, it's unbearable for Angela's loved ones. If covering this case can shed light on and bring attention to Angela's abduction and other disappearances like hers, then I think we can sleep pretty well at night. What we always do when we present a case to you is try to analyze the ways in which we might be able to prevent it from happening again, right? That anxious girly piece of all of us. And while, of course, there's this morbid curiosity that exists in all of us, I think if you dig a bit deeper, the root of it all is more closely linked to the anxiety and fear that we have of something happening to someone like us, and that somehow knowing of it could prepare us in the event that it did.
Right.
Again, we won't claim to be experts, no ma'am, but we are here to encourage you to have these very important conversations with the people that you love, to better prepare, keep each other safe, come up with plans ahead of time. And I reiterate all of this, even though I know you already know it, because I pour over the details of these cases and I cannot for the life of me in this one find out what she or anyone else could have done differently that would have made a difference.
Okay.
This is, to me, purely one of those situations. It happened to her.
Right.
And there was nothing anyone was going to be able to do. So with that, let's get into it. Angela Marie Hammond was born February 9th, 1971, to Chris and Marcia Hammond in Kansas City, Missouri.
Mm.
When Angela was about 4 years old, her family moved from Kansas City to Clinton. And according to the 2023 census, Clinton had a population of little more than 9,000, even less back in the 70s. Clinton was a low-crime area, the kind of place, especially then, where folks need not lock their doors, and you did actually know your neighbors.
Yeah.
Your kids just went out, and they came back when the streetlights came on, and that is what it was.
Yeah.
I have nostalgia for that time, even though I wasn't alive. I wish I was. Angela's mother's parents lived in Clinton, so Angela's grandparents were there. So now that they have moved there, they're closer with that side of the family. This area was very rural. Think farmland, factories, small town. please don't ask me to say that word again. It was hard enough the first time. When Angie was young, her parents divorced. Her dad moved to a town in Kansas that was like an hour and a half away, but Angie's mom moved to Montrose, which is a little under 30 minutes from Clinton.
Okay.
So a lot of what we're going to talk about does actually take place in Clinton.
Okay.
But that's not where they were living at the time. But it's also close, and that's kind of where a lot of stuff was, and that's where you went.
Yeah.
Growing up, Angie was the oldest of two and was described as outgoing and always smiling.
Aww.
She was well-liked in school. She was very smart. She was described as a little firecracker, which actually makes me laugh, especially because she came in at a whopping 4 feet 11 inches.
Yeah.
Which is very relatable to some people in this room that aren't Abby. And basically, Angie was a peanut with a personality.
Yeah.
Like, she had earned the nickname Firecracker because she was so full of energy and love and light, all packed into such a tiny package.
Yeah.
But she was just so loved. And in 1991, speaking of love, Angela found love.
Hmm.
She had a boyfriend, Rob Schaefer, who she adored, and the feelings were very mutual. She had graduated high school by this point. She worked as a bank clerk, and she went to Central Missouri State University, working hard to just move forward in life.
Yeah.
When she discovered she was pregnant in early 1991, the couple was surprised. They weren't by any means actively trying to conceive, but they welcomed this pregnancy and they were excited for the future.
Mm-hmm.
They both had a lot of support from their families, and the two supported each other. Rob was a little bit younger, I think, like about a year. He was still in high school, but he was wrapping this up. He was popular and he was on the football team. And due to the pregnancy, he wanted to do right by her and the baby and get married. And it wasn't like he was only marrying her because she was pregnant. I think they had always intended to be together, but it did move up their timeline a little bit with wanting to be really sort of kind of have everything together, be married by the time that the baby came.
Right.
And they wanted to show their commitment to each other because they're preparing to embark on this next chapter together.
Right.
And their lives are going to change forever, but in a way that they are excited about, not dreading. Yeah. Where I think maybe at that age, that's a tough age. He's still in high school. You're bringing life into the world. You're young yourself, but they did it with support and love for each other, that they just wanted to be together. And, you know, and I think it was maybe a little bit more common then too. I act like it's so long ago. This is, you know, 30 years ago, even though it pains me to say that the 90s were 30 years ago. But it was more common before to start your families younger. I think now, like, we have kind of shifted in, like, what young adulthood, like, the ages we would consider that. And, like, when people are typically out of their parents' house and starting families, I think we see that more in, like, especially for women having kids in their 30s more than we see in the 20s, then I'm not pulling that from statistics. That's just my personal experience. But what I'm seeing is a lot of that. And maybe you have too. So.
Right. And I think it's sweet. And I think it's both. It sounds very well intended. It sounds like it was part of the plan anyway for them to sort of create this cohesive family unit, which is exciting. I will say, personally, I love, like, so much when little toddlers get to be their parents, like, flower girls. Yeah. But I also totally understand, A, is like part of the times, but also B, just this desire to say, like, this is our family. This is our unit going forward. It was always the destination. Our journey has gotten a lot quicker.
Like, that's where we were going to go. We just kind of tightened the timeline.
Right.
And Rob had actually planned to join the military after graduation.
Okay.
And he was hopeful that he would complete his basic training by September 2nd, which is when Angie was due.
Aww.
And I think, I didn't see this reference, but I'm guessing that moving forward, wherever he were stationed, them being married would allow for her more easily to be with him and their family could be together. So I completely understand logistically and just because they love each other so much and we were going to either get married later or now, so let's get married now kind of thing.
And this is just me pondering, if anybody knows, please tell me because I'm curious. But I wonder if being married also would give him better access for, like, paternity leave or something like that.
Potentially, if it's granted, but maybe even more just for her, like, health benefits, if they're going to have to move somewhere that
Yeah, definitely.
You know, they're not used to being. It gives her a community. She might be allowed to live on base, depending on what branch and how that all works. And I won't pretend to know all the ins and outs of it, but I can see how all of these things kind of make sense.
Yeah.
On April 4th, 1991, the day in question, Angie was 4 months pregnant. She had spent the day at a cookout at her mom's house, and around 9 p.m. she left with Rob and their friend Kyla. And she had to drop Rob off at his house. Angie's mom, Marcia, said that Angie was driving them both home. First dropping him off, though, because he had to watch his little brother.
Okay.
So I think his mom was at work and no one was home watching the brother. So he went home to be there to watch him for a few hours. Angie was supposed to drive Kyla home, too.
Okay.
And then they were supposed to get back together later once his mom got home and...
Yeah.
Like, she could watch the brother. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So she drops him off, and then she's going to drop Kyla off, but the two kind of decided to drive around for a little bit and talk. And Angie, again, had planned to go back to see Rob that night. But by the time she dropped Kyla off, again, she's growing human life in her body.
Yeah.
She was tired, understandably so. And she just decided that after this long day, she just wanted to head home.
Yeah.
Instead of driving the few extra miles to go tell him in person, she stopped at a payphone in downtown Clinton around 11:15 p.m.
Okay.
To just call him to let him know, I know we had plans to get together later. I'm sorry. I'm not feeling up to it. I want to go to bed.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to head home. And this is Clinton, Missouri. This is a town that she knew very well. Well, after her parents divorced, she lived with her mom in Montrose, about a half hour away from Clinton. A lot of her friends, including Rob, still lived in Clinton, so she was spending a lot of time there anyway.
Right.
This payphone that she was at was in front of a store and was well lit. I believe it was a convenience store.
Okay.
Or some people say a supermarket. It might have been one of, like, a combo.
Yeah.
A store, if you will. So they spoke for a few minutes. When Angie told Rob that there was this weird man in the parking lot. Now it's 11:15. There's no one else around.
Right.
But this man has just driven up. And she did everything you're supposed to do. She had a feeling in her gut and she didn't feel like it felt right. So she described him to Rob. She's in the phone booth and she is like,
shit,
telling him that he's in this old looking green pickup truck with a quote, fishing mural on the back window.
Okay.
So there's something identifiable about this car. She described the man as dirty looking, kind of unkempt, with long hair, long beard, wearing coveralls. And then she told Rob that he was getting closer.
Oh.
Rob heard her scream. And then he heard nothing.
Oh my God.
Another version of the story is that Rob heard a man's voice say, it's okay, I didn't need to use the phone anyway, because he had walked up to the payphone next to hers and had been like,
oh,
looking like he was trying to use it.
Trying to fuck around, yeah.
So I think she asked him like, oh, do you need the phone? Do you need to use this one? And he was like, no, I didn't need the phone anyway, which is odd, because why would you go to the
It's even creepier.
Payphone? Like, the store isn't open. Why are you going to the payphone if you don't need to use the payphone?
Well, yeah.
And she had seen him rummaging in his car a little bit, I think, like, with a flashlight. So he was kind of being sketchy.
Yeah.
And she's telling all of this to him.
Good.
And then Rob hears her scream.
Right.
And then he can't, like, he's like, Angie, are you there? Nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
Regardless of where the truth lies, of what Rob heard on the other end or anything like that, what we do know is that Rob jumped in his car and he made a beeline for the payphone that she was calling from.
Oh my gosh.
He knew the town. He knew where she was. He just dropped everything and booked it out of the house. And this is the most haunting part. He is driving toward the payphone. As he's going there, a car is coming the other way. That car was a green pickup truck. And as it passes him, he hears her scream.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine that? I can't. I mean, goosebumps. I don't know.
Chills. Ugh.
So he can hear his pregnant fiance scream as he's passing this truck. and he watches helplessly.
Ugh.
He rips his car into reverse.
Yeah.
To start following this truck. But in the absolute worst case of bad luck ever, his car breaks down.
Oh my gosh.
So he has thrown it into reverse and goes to go forward, and he, something happened. His car was like, actually, no, we're not going to do that.
The fuck you are.
And yeah, it just stopped. So he is standing there helplessly watching the taillights just get further and further away, getting smaller and smaller until he sees them turn right.
Oh my God.
And that is the last sighting of Angela Hammond. Like, that is what we have.
Fuck.
When I tell you I can't think of anything anyone could have done for this to have gone differently, I don't have words.
Right. There's no choice. There's no action. There's no decision.
There was no anything. I mean, Angie could have maybe left as soon as she saw him. She didn't know that she should do that. But also, what, to go walk toward the guy? That,
right.
I mean, what is she to do? Absolute goosebumps. Ugh. He either got someone to give him a ride to the payphone or he ran there himself, but he did make a call to 911 and they had units out immediately.
Good.
Despite his every effort and despite law enforcement's very fast response, they could not find this truck.
Oh my gosh.
So, goosebumps, tears. I mean, reading this, I'm like, what do you do?
Right.
And she's small.
Yeah.
Like, she is, if a grown man just decides he's going to pick her up and move her, there is probably not a whole lot she's going to be able to do about it.
Right.
And I cannot begin to imagine what her loved ones felt in those moments and then every moment after that. To be and feel so close to being able to save her and to still have her taken away. Rob, he battles this every day, even today, nearly 35 years later.
Certainly. How could you not?
And Angie's mom said that nobody blames Rob. He did absolutely everything that he could, but she thinks that he does still blame himself.
Which is so hard because, honestly, I think he does. I mean, I want to say more than the typical person, but I think about this relationship. I think about their connection. I think anybody in his role in that relationship would absolutely jump the fuck up and start running over. But, you know, there are all sorts of circumstances in life, things that happen, barriers that come up, that he was able to do the thing he wanted to do, which was to go get her. To do what he could. And he got so fucking close.
He was, I mean, literally feet away.
Yeah.
In the passing car.
Could hear it, see it.
And if his truck hadn't broken down, I don't know what he would have done if he caught up to the truck.
Right.
But at least he could have at least followed it. And maybe someone could have been like, there's these two cars like racing.
Right. Or gotten like a license plate or something.
Or try to run them off the road. I mean, like, you just hope Angie knows to protect her. Like,
yeah,
you just don't know. But he wasn't given that chance. It was just.
Right.
I can't imagine the fear, like how fast your heart's racing. And you just, have you ever felt helpless where like you feel it in your arms?
Yeah.
And like they just need to move and you don't know why. And you just.
And you're just pacing or doing something
like
to do something.
Like, you have so much energy all of a sudden, like the adrenaline, but you've got nowhere to put it.
Yeah.
And it just, I can't, if I go there too long, like my heart rate, my blood pressure goes up. And this is 30 years in the future and I don't know these people. And right. I cannot fathom what either of them were feeling in those moments.
Ugh.
Rob felt like it was his responsibility to protect her and their unborn baby. He took that vow that he made to her when he proposed to her very seriously.
Yeah.
But the truth is, really, he couldn't have protected her. He couldn't have done anything. It was all out of his control. His quick thinking to head there anyway validated Angie's report to him that the man was in a green pickup truck because he saw it too.
Right.
He blames himself, but the truth is, if this case is ever solved, and I so hope for everyone's sake that it is, it will be in part thanks to him and Angie that she noticed something was off and she said something and she did what we're all supposed to do.
Right.
This coming from me, who, when I was a kid, as I've told you, if I saw a car that was being creepy or passed me more than once, I would literally dial the license plate and hit call and then hang up immediately so that if anything happened to me, at least you'd have the license plate.
Right.
And you best know that's where you look first.
Yes.
I would do that now. because that's the kind of thing where she was hyper aware of her.
Right.
I mean, she could have just had her back to him, not noticed, be giggling, doing whatever. And she wasn't doing that. She was aware of her surroundings.
Yeah.
She did what we're all supposed to do.
Well, and also I think about him, I think about her, but they both held up their end of that, I'll say, vow or responsibility. Like, if it was me, I would take it as my responsibility to be there for my family when I could. But I think that they did that. I mean, there was literally nothing to do that they didn't.
How could he do it differently? His car broke down.
Exactly. Like, there's no choice. He's not going to outrun it.
He's not going to catch up.
There's no fight that he lost. You know what I mean? Like, there's literally nothing that he failed at, which makes it so heartbreaking that he's like, this is my fault. When in all reality, yeah, if this does go somewhere, that is his fault. Like, it is partially his fault that it gets solved, if and yeah, hopefully when it does.
Because of what? Yeah.
Right.
Because he can confirm, yeah, this is what the truck looked like.
And I have to imagine it is freaking mind-boggling to be like, this is a green pickup truck with a fucking fish window decal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, notable. It's not a gray sedan.
Only notable if you're around there, though.
Yeah.
And remember, we have to remember that this is 1991.
It's also Missouri.
He doesn't have a cell phone.
Right.
He doesn't have a way. This is farmland. This is long country roads. Take me home. This yeah. is like, we have to put ourselves there too. Corn.
Well, I know it. I can see the silo.
I know.
I also said Missouri because I can imagine there's probably a lot of fishing decals everywhere, but depending on how big it was.
So yeah. All of this to say, like, this is kind of what's going on. And as an aside, I relate to Angie. I, yeah. too, am a physical giant. So I'm very intimidating. That's what everyone says when they meet me. I think it's because I am so tall and I have such a...
Yeah.
commanding sort of presence and stature and posture. And
you're 8 feet tall for someone who's 3 feet tall.
Correct. Like, yeah. When I wear my heels and I come in like a bad bitch, 5'2",
yeah,
like, you know, you don't even want to owe a dollar to me. I'm so fucking,
you're towering.
Yeah, like, I'm so intimidating. I relate to, you know, I get that. I yeah. dig it. But in seriousness, I know the experience of being not just like a short, petite woman, but like a very short woman in right. our society, that you are often viewed as an easy target, that we likely can't fight off someone even just a few inches taller, which is not that tall. I know that she had to rely more on her brain and her quick wit and her instinct to detect if something's wrong, defend off something scary.
Right.
Because she wasn't likely to win in a fight against a grown man.
Yeah.
She trusted those survival instincts. And maybe they were heightened due to her pregnancy and the maternal instinct is kicking in to protect not only herself, but her unborn baby.
Yeah.
She did what I hope any one of us would do. It's like she did what Liam Neeson's daughter did in Taken.
Right.
She started telling him what he was doing, what he was wearing, what he looked like, what he was driving.
Yeah.
You don't get better than that. In that moment, and no, she is absolutely. Alone. Like, Bill Burr has a funny skit about this, where it's like, we are so glued to our phones. Like, if we left our phones and we went to the end of our own street, we'd be like, oh my God, I don't have my ID. Like, who's going to find me? What if I need something? What if something right. happens? Like, we have this dependence. Our phones are on us like glue. Like, we're all going to have ass cancer because we all have it in our back pocket, and all of our right ass cheeks are going to be
lit up,
like radiated. Like, it's a problem, but we're so dependent on that. And I wish I lived in a time where I had at least part of my life where that wasn't it. I mean, I was a 90s kid. I have memories of no cell phones, but those are fleeting now, right. You know, and my kids certainly won't have that. But he's alone and he doesn't have a way to reach anybody, and she's alone and she doesn't have a way to reach anybody.
Yeah.
She just has to fucking deal with it. Right. What do you do? She can't share her location. She can't send like an SOS 911 message. He's not driving to the payphone, taking a video to try to capture the car that's coming toward him.
Right.
He's not on the phone with 911 as he's going so that somebody can already be en route when, you know, when they get to, I don't know, the next traffic light. Like, these things would exist today. They don't exist there.
Right.
And all of this, doing the right thing, both of them, it didn't bring her back, and it didn't lead to finding her. Ugh. Again, we have the luxury of looking at this through the lens of society as it is today. And again, while I hate to remind you and me that the 90s were 30 years ago.
You keep saying that.
I know. It was a different world. We have to keep that in the back of our mind when we're thinking of this, because there's a lot of, well, why didn't you do this, or what ifs that you would probably think instinctively today.
Sure.
That weren't possible then. And right now, dear listener, you know everything that I know for a fact as to the circumstances of her disappearance.
Ooh.
There's theories. We're going to talk about them. But there hasn't been a credible lead in a very long time.
I hate that.
The investigation was immediate. Good. And despite every effort, we know that they didn't find her. Immediately, Rob was a suspect. It's always the husband, boyfriend, fiance, what have you. And because there wasn't anyone else to corroborate his story, he did need to be thoroughly looked into.
Yeah.
He was cleared. He had an alibi. And despite what you'd think at first glance, just hearing that a young pregnant woman went missing and the last person she spoke to was the father of that baby, and it was unplanned, it might make you look twice at him too.
Sure.
But Rob really was home watching his little brother. And Angie's mom, Marcia, herself said that she never thought for a second it could have been him. She's known him his whole life. Mm-hmm. And she knows he only ever wanted to protect her daughter.
Yeah.
And like we said, Rob blamed himself, and I hope he doesn't anymore. I believe he's married with children at this point, and there is still a part of him every day that thinks of her, that worries about her, that prays that she's found.
Right.
Because he did make a promise to her when he gave her the engagement ring that he would protect her and their baby.
Yeah.
And that he took that so seriously. He felt a sense of duty to provide. And he feels like he failed. And he couldn't be any more wrong about that. And there isn't anything else that he could have done. But needless to say, within a week, investigators were able to successfully rule him out. That he did confirm what she had said on the phone about this truck. But he is the only witness they can talk to that even had a glance at it.
Right.
What seems odd to many people that hear about this case is why she went to a payphone in the first place. So where this payphone was located was 7 blocks from where Rob was.
Oh, interesting.
And a lot of people wonder, if you were going to drive to the payphone, why wouldn't you just drive to him to let him know?
Right.
And there are a few different reasons for that. I also do kind of wonder this, but I put myself in their shoes and I can see a few possible different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, she was supposed to hang out with Rob again after his mom got home? I believe once his mom was home, he wouldn't be needed as the babysitter, so he was able to go kind of do what he wanted.
Yeah.
And that would be to go see Angie, because that's all he ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
But Angie was exhausted, and I hope to one day have children. Haven't yet, so I'm just imagining that when you're pregnant, and it's been a long day because you've been at a cookout, and it's hot out. This was like a beautiful April day.
Yeah.
This was like sunny 75.
Ooh, the sneak peek of summer.
Yeah, you're eating like good. You're with your friends. You're with your family. You have plans, but like you're also, you know, creating life.
Yeah, your ankle's probably swollen. This is right second trimester, you said. So we're at morning sickness, which is not just in the morning. Like,
we're doing all the things. We've got all that going on. And so I do wonder that, you know, even if it was an extra 10 minutes to go swing by his house, When you're tired, that feels like forever. But also, if you go in and you say, no, I don't want to hang out later, well, maybe you like get sucked in.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, why don't you just come in and like watch TV or whatever? You know what I mean? And then just like you risk feeling even more tired for the drive home that you know you still have to do. That's still a half hour away.
Yeah.
That maybe you just don't feel like taking the extra 10 minutes because you're exhausted. Another possibility I thought of, again, I'm not seeing these referenced anywhere, this is just me guessing.
Right.
Is maybe she wasn't allowed over the house without parents home.
I was thinking
that, she was being respectful of their rules. I mean, I don't know what they'd be trying to prevent. She's already pregnant. But maybe it was a respect thing. You know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe it was not under not under our roof, and that could have been it. And she just didn't have it in her to wait, but right. She wasn't going to go there because she wasn't permitted to, so she just wanted to give a call. The reason's unknown to us. We really don't know for sure.
Right.
We just think it was just because she was tired, because that's what she told him.
Well, and even, I mean, I would say probably regardless, that's true underneath all of the things, but like, I don't know about you guys. Sometimes, like we just said in this episode, we are empathetic to a fault. If I go over and I know it's going to bum you out that I can't stay, I'm going to feel so bad.
It's almost easier to say no over the
phone. Yeah, to be like, hey, I love you. I'm just really not feeling well. I'm going to go home. Mm-hmm. I love you. Don't be mad, please. Like,
you know, and, like, I can see so many different ways. Ultimately, we know this is what she did. And that tiny decision to not drive the extra 7 blocks.
Right.
Was likely life or death, and you wouldn't, no one thinks that that decision you make could impact that. Are you kidding me?
Right. And almost, I'm not going to say always, but in a lot of cases, I almost feel like it's the opposite, where it's like, well, if you would have just stopped sooner, or you would have done this thing, like, mm-hmm. you know, there's all of these seemingly inconsequential decisions, and there's never a way to know which answer is really the one that's going to be consequential. Like,
I have no idea how many decisions I've made in my life that had I made the other one, right. something tragic could have happened.
Yeah.
Or maybe I would have won the lottery. I don't know. I'm still here, so I didn't win the lottery. But you know what I mean. Like, yeah. There's just, I actually have to play the lottery to win the lottery, but that's besides the point. What I'm saying is these seemingly inconsequential decisions that we make that seem so trivial and nothing
right.
can be everything. And we don't know it. Sometimes until it's too late. We do know for a fact that they left the cookout. She dropped Rob off.
Mm-hmm.
She drove around with Kyla. She dropped Kyla off. And then she went to this payphone. And it was at this payphone that she was abducted by an unknown man.
Okay.
Investigators honed their focus on registrations of vehicles like the one Angie described to Rob and the one that Rob described to police when he was giving his report.
Right.
And together with the local PD and the Missouri State Highway Patrol, they did a search on all registered vehicles that could be the one they were looking for.
Okay.
This search yielded 1,600 possibilities of pickup yep. trucks
yeah,
that did. Then had to be checked up on in terms of color and to find out if they had the decal. And there were no matches.
Wow.
That was it. So that yielded nothing.
Hmm.
Which was like the best lead that they right. had.
They had a vehicle.
Investigators then broadened their investigation and kind of noticed two other cases of women being abducted not too far away.
Oh, okay.
So remember, Angie went missing April 4th, 1991. One of the cases that could be linked to hers happened in January of 91, and the other was in February.
Oh, okay. So close. It's
January, February, and then very beginning of April. So almost all a month apart.
Right.
Which could be
something.
Something. So let's talk about those two cases. On January 19th, Trudy Darby went missing. Trudy was a 42-year-old woman who worked at a convenience store.
Okay.
On that day, she was working alone. It was about 10 p.m. She called her son up on the phone and told him that there was a suspicious man loitering outside, and she just thought it was weird.
Mm.
And she wanted him to head there.
Right.
Her son dropped what he was doing, and he went to the store. By the time he got there, nobody was there.
Ugh.
In the 10 minutes it took him to leave from where he was to get to his mother's workplace, she was taken. Her vehicle was there. Money was missing from the cash register.
Okay.
But her purse was left behind.
Weird.
2 days later, Trudy's body was found 10 miles from her workplace. She had 2 gunshot wounds to her head.
Oh.
Now, in 1995, 2 men, Jess Rush and his half-brother Marvin Cheney, were convicted of Trudy's assault and murder. Okay. Having kidnapped her, raped her, and then left her body along the Little Niangua River. I definitely said that wrong. Now, Marvin Cheney died in prison in 2017 at 56 years old. May he rest in purgatory. And someone, not me, thought it was a good idea to give parole to Jess Rush because he was a juvenile when he committed the crime. Like, he was 15 when he murdered Trudy.
Okay, that's young.
And we know that we've had some overturning of legislation where we can't sentenced a juvenile to life in prison. Now they are all deserving of a resentencing hearing where they could be given the same sentence again.
Right.
But a lot of times they're reconsidering it and looking at, you know, we know more now about the brain and everything. Well, we probably had it right the first time, because as soon as he was out, he wound up back in prison again because he had multiple firearms and he was a felon in possession, and you can't do that. But ultimately, these men who were younger at the time killed Trudy. That's proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And so at that time, it was officially like removed from being linked to Angie and this other woman that we're going to talk about.
Okay. Yes. Because they're behind bars for yes. that. Right.
So we know for a fact that they didn't commit this.
Right.
So, I mean, these all happened so close. It seems like they only did. I say only. But they're responsible for Trudy's death and nobody else's, which is horrific, because right. in the 10 minutes it took her son to just get there, I don't know which one of them she saw in the parking lot, but they were able to literally remove her from there and then abuse her, kill her, and then leave her body. And it was found 2 days. But her body was found.
Right.
The other two,
which is different,
were not. On February 28th, 1991, Cheryl Ann Kenny, a 30-year-old woman who also worked at a convenience store,
interesting,
went missing. She was married. She had 2 young kids.
Mm-hmm.
She's never been found. She was working at the Quality convenience store in Nevada, Missouri, which
okay.
did not know there was a Nevada. Nevada? How do people say that?
Let us know. We don't know.
I know I've said it wrong. I've said a lot of things wrong. On this evening, she was working a later shift and the store wasn't busy. A light maintenance man who was there earlier in that night said ultimately, like, it was uneventful. It wasn't very busy. There were very few customers. A few men that he didn't know shopped there, like, that night,
mm-hmm.
which was only a little bit weird just because it was such a small town and usually at least recognized everybody if you didn't know right. everybody. But they didn't do anything that was suspicious to him.
Right.
At 10:17 p.m., she locked the store for the night. She was leaving. The store was closed. She set the alarm. And she headed to her car. Witnesses nearby heard a woman screaming. Cheryl vanished and she has not been seen again.
Oh my God.
So this is like parking lot abduction.
Right.
Kind of similar to me, to Angie's. Now, originally, right, these three were linked. Trudy's murder, we know, wasn't related because her killers have been caught and convicted. And frankly, in my opinion, her case seemed the least similar, in my opinion, if we're comparing all three.
Yeah,
I think there are some real similarities between all of them, but I think that Angie and Cheryl's seem more tightly linked. For example, they're more similar in age.
Yeah.
Angie was 20. Cheryl was 30. Trudy's 42.
Okay.
I think if your victim choice is younger woman, your look between 20 and 30 seems perfectly appropriate to me.
Sure.
Both young. Both looked like they could have been about the same age, just because Angie, I mean, what 20-year-old can't make herself look 25?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
And what 30-year-old with good skincare doesn't look 25?
Correct. Yeah. So I could see that's your victim type. I understand that. They both were petite.
Okay.
Now, Cheryl was like 5'7", but she was like very thin.
Okay.
So in terms of like picking somebody up and forcing them into your car, probably a lot easier to do with her than somebody not.
Right.
You know? Both seemed to be kidnapped by somebody that was waiting for them.
Yes.
Right? Angie saw this man in the truck. He had circled a bit. He went to the payphone next to her and then back to his car, and then he abducted her. It's believed that Cheryl was taken by someone who probably knew when the store was closing and when she would be leaving.
Okay.
So kind of lying in wait versus Trudy was taken from inside the store, outside right. of the store, and then taken further away. Just small differences, but worth noting. And when Trudy was taken from the store, this wasn't at closing time. So this wasn't, I mean, it was nighttime, but it wasn't when the store was closing. And there was, seemed to be like robbery intent, right? The
right.
missing cash from the cash register versus when Cheryl was abducted, if they wanted to rob the store, they would have done it when the store was open.
Right.
Not as she's locking up and leaving it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. or even just had her open it back up. She had keys, but, you know, obviously right. that didn't happen.
Trudy's body was found. Cheryl and Angie have never been found.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that there's just more similarities in the other two. Again, yeah. unsolved, never found them, taken in a parking lot, nighttime, alone.
Yeah. Well, and
no robbery.
It's so difficult with cases like this because the only things you have to go off of is the site of abduction.
Mm-hmm.
At least for Angie and Cheryl. But, I mean, who's to say? Yeah, it's so difficult with things like this because we don't have a way to confirm an MO. Like, we have their sort of initial attack style, but that's really it.
And we don't even know that. We don't know. Did you try to, like, hit them in the head and try to
right.
incapacitate them? Did you try to, like, use chloroform? Did you try to just put duct tape over it? Like, we yeah. know Angie could scream. And yep. we know that Cheryl could because other people around heard a woman screaming. But the ground wasn't even disturbed where Cheryl was taken.
Wow.
And I don't know about Angie.
Yeah.
But like these were like outside parking lot abductions. Like she was taken from a phone booth outside on the outside of a store.
Right.
Versus Trudy's taken from inside, brought out. There's robbery. There's a sexual motivation. There's a sexual component of the crime.
Right.
And then her body is just left to be found.
Which is so fucking awful.
And remember that Cheryl and Angie, this is about a month apart.
Right.
This is February and April 4th.
Right. It's late February, early April.
Yep. Actually, the last day of February is February 28th.
Yeah.
Unless it was a leap year. But this kind of stuck out to investigators because yeah. they're like, we've got in this state, not that far from each other.
Right.
We've got three women taken. What is that about?
Yeah.
Like, what is going on here? And all of these women were ripped from their families, from their friends.
Mm-hmm.
All were stolen. And as far as we can assume, it's very likely that all three are deceased.
Yeah.
Now, the current theory.
Okay.
This is the most recent. I believe this was in 2021 because it seems that this happened. This theory was released from the investigators on the 30th anniversary of Angie's disappearance.
Okay. Oh my God. Okay.
Clinton police released an updated theory that they had been working on in relation to Angie's case. They said that there are several open and active leads being considered. Again, this is from 2021, so I don't know if this is still the case.
Right.
But one of those leads is out of the Ozarks region.
Oh, okay.
So lakes with water. I don't know where they're yep. getting this from, but this is what we're pulling. My understanding is a lot of this has still not been made public, and for good reason.
Yeah.
But they did say that around this time, around April of 1991, a confidential informant had provided information that led to an illegal drug operation being busted.
Okay.
So a big fall.
Right.
During the course of the case, the informant's identity was revealed.
Oh.
Right? As everyone's being prosecuted and everything, yeah. they're moving forward. This informant, who it was, came to light. On April 4th, 1991, that informant received a letter with clippings from magazines, like out of a movie, that wrote out a letter, like wrote out a message yep. to him. This letter said, and I'll read it because they used his informant number because informants are usually identified by a number to preserve, of course, their identity. And then they also, in this letter, named them. So it was like, whoa. I know your name and I know your informant number. So it was like, it said, hello, number redacted. We know who you are, number redacted. People like you deserve what you get.
Oh.
We know where your foxy daughter is, as she will see us soon. Tell redacted, she has our deepest sympathy and her further loss. Goodbye.
Shit.
So let's break that down. Obviously, naming the informant number, pretty pointed.
Yeah.
We know who you are. That's the informant.
Yeah.
People like you deserve what you get. References a daughter.
Yeah.
That we know where she is and that basically she'll be ours soon.
Yeah.
Right? She'll be with us soon. And tell the that other redacted is his wife. So they said, tell your wife she has our deepest sympathy and her further loss.
Fuck.
And this was like Zodiac style magazine clippings sent to this man.
Okay.
Whoever he is. If his identity's out there, I did not want to mention
it. Yeah.
That informant, though, had a daughter, the Foxy daughter referenced, whose name was Angie.
Oh, my God.
Who bore a striking resemblance to Angie Hammond, who also lived in Clinton, Missouri.
Oh, my gosh.
It is now believed, the most current theory, is that Angie Hammond was not the intended target.
Right.
But it was a case of a mistaken identity and that she was taken in retaliation from this drug cartel basically being taken down.
Right. Fuck.
And that is what we know about this case.
I mean, that does make the most sense of everything that we know, but...
Oh. On the day Angie was taken...
On
April 4th, 1991, this man gets this letter saying, we know who you are, people, like, you deserve this. Tell your wife I'm sorry for, like, the further loss that she's going to have. We're going to find your daughter. We know where she is.
Right. Oh, my God.
The day Angie Hammond gets abducted. And that daughter's name was Angie, and she lived in Clinton, which is, you know...
And they look similar.
The town that Angie happened to be in.
Yeah.
And they looked like the odds of all of those things, first of all, miraculous anyway.
Yeah.
But just, what the fuck? And like, if you're that guy getting that letter, you probably, after nothing happened, I mean, at first you're probably freaking out, right? I'd go to the police, like, you would, right? You think your family's in danger now? Absolutely.
I'm going to the police and everybody in my family is coming with me. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
You're duct taped to me now. Sorry, can't get away.
Nope. Sorry. Hope you like doing boring shit that I like doing because you're going to be doing it.
Yeah, we're going to be at the police station for a while.
Uh-huh.
Just writing shit.
Hope you like the color gray because it's going to be all around.
There's a lot of it.
You know, so it does seem like while there is that theory that her and Cheryl's case could be linked.
Yeah.
The current, in my opinion, most likely possibility here is that she was literally taken because she happened to be in the wrong, like she happened to be in the town. She looked like the girl that they were going after, and she had the same name.
This feels like an awful, terrible, not funny, very real life version of The Big Lebowski. Like, what the fuck is this?
Absolutely. No, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like less drugs and bowling, I guess.
A lot. I would say 100% less bowling.
Well, you don't know. It's the Midwest. There's not a lot to do out there.
True. But we don't. The drugs are questionable. We don't know if it's less drugs.
True.
Drug cartel. I mean, now they got busted.
Crap, though. Like, what the hell?
And that's it.
Her poor family.
And it's hard enough to imagine your loved one just being taken and not knowing why, but then potentially finding out that the most likely possibility is that she was taken by accident.
Yeah.
And it was like, what did they do when they found out they fucked up? Killed her anyway because she knew too much now?
Right.
Like, you picked her. You took this woman who's 20 years old, her whole life in front of her. She's graduated high school. She's putting herself through school. She is working. She is pregnant. She's getting married.
Right.
Like, she is on her life's doorstep. Like, she hasn't even started.
Yeah.
Like, the best hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
And you plucked her away for what? To make a statement to somebody because you thought, you know, assuming she's the person that you thought she was.
Yeah.
What, were you going to kill that man's daughter? Is that what it was? Or was that just to scare him? Were you just going to fuck with her? But now, shit, she knows you and this was unjustified and you can't really get her to keep quiet. So you just kill her? And by then also killing, you know, the baby that she was very excited to have. Like, she was over the moon happy. For what? For what?
I also get really irritated with things like this because personally, I think too much and I know that, but I don't think this is a stretch. So if I try to put myself in the shoes of someone in a drug cartel who just got busted by someone. Yeah, okay, I'm pissed. All right, I'm pissed. Like, that was my whole thing, and he fucked up my thing, right?
Yeah, don't fuck with my livelihood.
But, like, then if I'm not above taking and killing somebody else, why am I not just doing that to the person I'm mad at? And giving them more things to get me on, because I already know they're going to rat me out.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I already have that info secured. Like, you don't like me, you don't care, you're not going to protect me. They shouldn't. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, that is the thought process. So why are we doing this to somebody else? I know it's, like, quote unquote, more pain to live with, but it's also more of a risk that I'm like, that's dumb. And then also, and I don't mind being mean to people that are terrible people. I'll say that. You're not even going to bother to do the damn research to make sure you got the right person?
Nope.
Brother, a good dealer never breaks into his own stash. What are you thinking?
Maybe sober up. Looking twice at making sure.
Consider, I don't know, daytime. Well, like, what?
But then at the same time, imagine being the daughter of the informant.
Right. Terrified.
Do you feel like you cheated death? Like,
yeah,
someone else died
in your place, maybe.
Possibly. I mean, we don't know what happened, but I think Angie didn't go willingly, and she's never been seen or heard from again. So either she is dead or worse happened and then she died.
Right.
Like, these are the very terrible, very real possibilities.
And this is why, like, DNA is so important. All of these investigations that we talk about, the things we bring up, even from 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, if there's any fucking DNA preserved, like true evidence preservation. I mean, I'm not a forensic scientist. I don't know how long some of those things hold up for in quality. But if you can get anything from it to save it, you don't know where we're going to end up. There have been so many cases solved that are about DNA. There have been people that have been let out of prison because of DNA.
Yeah, but imagine you have to have DNA to test to have it be a breakthrough.
But that's, you know what I mean? That's what I mean. Like,
yeah, the only thing that we're going to get DNA wise from what I know of this case, which I got as much as I could. There's not a ton. Again, it is
right.
35. Well, it's 35 years old and we don't, there's so much we don't know.
Right.
Like, there's, I have a lot of questions.
Oh yeah.
But the only way I see DNA coming into this is that we find remains and they are able to test and confirm that it's her.
Well, unfortunately, that's kind of where I was going. Like,
But I want the person who did this to, I don't know, rot.
Oh, for sure.
Like, they're just chilling. Fuck that.
100%.
Or worse, just had the luxury of dying without having to speak to it first.
Yeah.
No.
And I don't know. I'm not someone who's angry or mad or like wishes poorly on other people. It's just very hard to, it's very hard to know that there are people out here who do things like this for things and reasons that are as silly and stupid as impulse or as retribution in a really ridiculously illogical way. Like,
also not to mention you fucked up.
Yeah.
Royally. So nice.
And you're just gonna fucking hang out and live the rest of your and nothing? Not even like a Google when your name comes up? Nothing? Like nothing?
Well, as the dude would say, that's just like your opinion, man.
Well, careful, there's a beverage here. Okay. But what the hell?
I know. And it's maddening. I just, her family just deserves closure.
Yeah.
I don't know that we'll ever know what happened, but if they could just bring her home.
Well, and I think that that's part of what gets me about this is, you know, I don't think there's going to be any DNA except if we were to find remains or something, because I know that if she was still alive and she had any chance of getting out of there, she'd already be back home. Like, that sounds like the exact kind of person she is. I don't doubt that that would have been her first fucking choice.
She's not home because somebody made it so that she couldn't be.
Exactly. So I don't know what other way there is.
I don't either.
I feel for her family. I feel for her family. I feel for that informant's family. Fuck.
I mean, everyone's innocent. These are all good people here.
Yeah.
Like, we have an innocent daughter of the informant who we have no reason to believe is involved in anything. She just happened to be the daughter of somebody who
knew info,
who had information or was a part of something, had a deal, or I don't know.
Right.
I don't know what criminal activity her dad was or was not involved in, but I know that she was innocent and she was on basically a hit list.
Right.
We have Angie Hammond and her unborn child who have done absolutely nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Rob, who's done absolutely nothing wrong. The friend who was the last one to see her.
Right.
Their families, like,
yeah,
so many, their community was rocked. I mean, there are so many victims in this. When we talk about, yes, Angie has paid the price likely with her life, but these have such lasting impacts. These traumatized people, this right. terrified people, because you knew your neighbors and you liked them.
Yeah.
and you didn't lock your doors. And now you have to look over your shoulder all the time because you don't know if you're the one that's next.
Right. Well, and even just, it's that whole butterfly ripple effect. Like, this happened, and I know that town is different. And I know that everybody that her family interacts with, or Rob interacts with, or his kids, like, they're all different for this because of something that none of them had any say in.
And it was over before you knew it was happening.
Right. And I can't fucking imagine what Rob goes through. I can only begin to try. And it's awful. I just feel so bad.
And, like, it'll make me cry if I think about it too much. But if you're Angie,
right,
and you are on the phone with him, and you know that he's going to come for you,
yeah,
because you know who is to be your husband, and he would not just sit idly by.
Mm-hmm.
He is on his way, and you are screaming as he drives by. And she might have known it was him.
Right.
And you see him rip the car around.
And he can't.
And then you see that he's not getting any closer and you're getting further away. And you're, why? Why is that mm-hmm. happening? What happened? Oh no, the car. Oh no. Oh no, he's not going to get me. Like,
oh no.
Those split second thoughts, that whole dialogue happened in like half a second in her mind.
Right.
And the panic and the adrenaline, and she's pregnant and she wants to protect her baby, and it just, it's unfathomable, it's so awful, but she had to live through it. And if there is anything that can bring attention to her case and get this solved, then that's what needs right. to happen. And I don't know how we protect ourselves more. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that in the future, maybe calling the police before you go in your car.
That, yeah, that's the only thing. And honestly, I mean,
but then you lose the time. You know what I mean? Like, you really right. think you can be the one to like stop this. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know the right answers or tell like Monday morning quarterback something that is everyone's worst nightmare. And he seemed to have handled it so incredibly well that I don't know what I would have done. And I cannot imagine the stress of that.
Right. Or God, like the PTSD that sticks with you. I can really only begin to imagine. I have no idea. And I know we always try to talk about things here that, like, if someone can go through it, we can talk about it. Like, we can sit in that discomfort for a while, try to bring light to it, try to feel what some of these people have had to live with every day. But sometimes, and in cases like this, and I'm sure in every case in ways that we don't know, you just have this really heavy knowledge that, like, even where you sit in their shoes, even where you try, you know there's parts of this that impact them in ways you can't even imagine. Like, you can't even start to try to empathize with, because how could you? How would you? And ugh, I hate this.
If you have any information or you know somebody who does, I very strongly encourage you to contact the Clinton, Missouri Police Department. Mm-hmm. And their number is 660-885-2679.
That'll be in our show notes, don't worry.
And that is what I have for you today.
Oh, I hate that.
So let us know your thoughts. Are you from around there? Do you know something different that we don't? That isn't in the records?
Theories going around local communities that you know that aren't online? I don't know.
Let us know. You know how to let us know. Abby, tell them how to let us know.
All right. If you go down to our show notes where that number is, you would also find our link tree, which has our email in it. It also has our Instagram, which we love. You can go on there, send us a DM, send us your pod pet. You gotta, please, we're begging you. And you can send us little questions, ask, you know, again, we have those polls, ask anything you want to know about us. Tell us a murder that you're interested in or a case that's always had you fascinated and just chewing on it forever. Or, you know, take a look at our resources. We do have those highlighted. Allie does a great job. We have memes. We have information that you can get. We have pictures of every person, place, and thing that we talk about, baby.
We do.
So check it out. And if you wanted to do anything else, we do have our Redbubble for some stickers or merch. And you could find our Venmo and our PayPal for a little fiscal donation to the pod if you wanted to help us keep this thing running. But hopefully that's a long enough list of to-dos in the next week or so, because if I look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Oh, my gosh.